You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Yesterday, the President of the United States, after the failed vote, we actually carried it live on this program as he spoke to the nation and said that the NRA had lied to us. It's pretty amazing to hear the President of the United States use the word lie. I honestly have no recollection of any president ever using that word in my lifetime. It may have happened, but it is, you know, typically the way the politicians talk is they say, well, the other side is not being completely genuine with the facts, or they're, you know, being ingenuous. He said they lied. That's incredible. And all the networks carried it live, so everybody in America got to see President Obama calling out the NRA for their lies, except those poor, pathetic idiots who watch Fox News. I mean, isn't that sad? If you watch Fox News, you don't get to see the president give an actual speech to the nation. Even the people working at Fox News, several of them were apparently shocked by this. MSNBC President Phil Griffin calls it a disgrace. I think that it's not a disgrace. Come on, Fox News is the official organ of the Republican Party, the official political organ. You say, well, MSNBC is the official Democratic. No, I've seen Morning Joe. It's not the Democratic Party's official organ. They got a bunch of left-leaning people on there. And lockup? I mean, seriously? So, you know, who are these Republicans who said, no, it's fine with us if terrorists buy guns. It's fine with us if mentally ill people buy guns. It's fine with us if people who beat their wives or husbands buy guns. It's fine with us if people who have committed murder, manslaughter, mayhem buy guns. That's fine. Who are these people? Well, Senator Mike Enzi is one of them. When asked about it, he had some really deep thoughts. There's a great Hunter put a great post on this over at Daily Kos today, quoting the esteemed Republican senator from Wyoming, who told us that we don't have, that it would be wrong to filter out the crazies from owning weapons of death. He said, one of the things we need are parents to be more careful and more repetitive at telling their kids that it is not right to kill people. Isn't that profound? Mike Enzi, deep thinker. What kind of fools? I just don't, you know, what kind of fools do these people think that we are? I mean, just please explain this to me. Lamar Alexander, the Republican from Tennessee, if you're from Tennessee, he thinks you're a fool. He wants terrorists and wife beaters and mentally ill people to be able to have assault weapons any old time they want. Buy them on the internet. Kelly Ayotte, the Republican from New Hampshire, she would love to have crazy people be able to buy guns on the internet. Mike Barrasso, the Republican from Wyoming. I don't know all of these people's first names, so I'm gonna have to bump on a few of them. But I have the last name list of the vote. They vote, you know, by senator. But I'm pretty sure it's Mike Barrasso, the Republican from Wyoming. It's like, no, you're crazy. Hey, have a gun. Max Baucus, the Democrat from Montana. Well, we've all known for all these years, I mean, that Max isn't really a Democrat. The Max is for sale to the highest bidder. I mean, just look at Obamacare. It's John Barrasso. Thank you, Shano. Mark Begich, the Democrat from Alaska. Now, I remember, you know, when he was first elected, we had him on the program, and we talked about a few issues, and he seemed like a fairly decent, progressive guy, but I don't know. Maybe he's been hanging out with Sarah Palin? I don't get it. Is it Roy Blunt in Missouri, the Republican from Missouri? Mr. Boozman, Republican from Arkansas? Right. Mr. Boozman would like somebody who has a serious alcohol problem, somebody who is such a serious alcoholic that they are diagnosed as like, you know, over the top. They go insane. They have blackouts. They've killed two or three people accidentally, so they got manslaughter charges and after 15 years got out of jail. And Mr. Boozman would like them to be able to buy a gun. Mr. Burr of North Carolina. I think that's Richard Burr. Saxby Chambliss down in Georgia, the Republican from Georgia. Crazy people buy guns? Oh, sure. Al-Qaeda people buy guns? Oh, of course. Drug lords from Mexico, Saxby Chambliss, he must just love these people. Senator Coates from Indiana. If, you know, by the way, as I'm naming these folks, these are the people who voted to say to the American people, screw you. These are the people who voted to 90% of Americans who think that just common sense background checks for anybody, any gun show that sells more than 75 guns. Now, this won't even cover things like garage sales where you're selling to total strangers or small town gun shows. Doesn't even cover that. This is like for the real big stuff, gun shows, over 75 guns being sold. And it exempts friends. Right, if I can establish that I know you, even if I know that you're insane and that you're Osama bin Laden's cousin, I can sell you a gun and I don't have to do a background check. Right, I mean, this thing was so full of loopholes, but it was something. But, so anyhow, if you live in Indiana, you might want to call Mr. Coates' office and just say, what the hell are you thinking? Or something like that. Actually, let me rephrase that. If you're going to call a senator's office, you need to be respectful. I would like to know, I'm just curious, respectfully, what the hell was the senator thinking? That's the more appropriate way to say it. Senator Coburn, the Republican from Oklahoma, the man who I believe once took the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. Senator Cochran from Mississippi. Senator Corker from Tennessee. John Cornyn from Texas. Terrorists, guns? Sounds fine to me. Senator Crapo from Idaho. Am I mispronouncing that? I'm guessing he doesn't pronounce it that way. It's Crapo, right? Crapo, okay. The Republican from Idaho. He's never been on the show. I really wasn't trying to make fun of his name. Although I inadvertently did. My apologies, Senator Crapo. Ted Cruz, the Republican from Texas. I mean, you know, this guy thinks he's the new Joe McCarthy. He's trying to make a career of it. So, of course. Well, actually, that doesn't make sense. Because he's afraid of communists in the State Department and stuff like that. So why would he want... He's afraid of, you know, all the terrorists and everything. So why would he want the terrorists to be able to buy guns over the internet with no background check? I don't get it. Mike Enzi, the Republican from Wyoming. The Republican from Nebraska, Mr. Fisher. Jeff Flake, appropriately named Republican from Arizona. Terrorists? Guns? Sounds like a fine combination to me.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Senator Hatch from Utah, Senator Grassley from Iowa, Senator Graham from South Carolina. Yes, terrorists, drug dealers, guns. So I was about halfway through my list here of these idiots who said, yeah, it's fine with me if drug dealers buy assault weapons through the internet. It's fine with me if wife beaters can just, you know, go down and get any old gun they want. And we'll just quickly Heidkamp, Heller, Hoven, Inhofe, Isaacson, Johans, Johnson, Lee, McConnell, Mitch McConnell, yes, indeed. Moran, Murkowski, Paul, Rand Paul, well, Mr. Freedom, yes. Rob Portman from Ohio, Mr. Moderation, Pryor, Risch, Roberts, Rubio, Scott, Sessions, Shelby, Thune, Vitter, and Wicker. Who are these idiots who are suggesting, yeah, it's fine with me if, you know, you're going to have a gun show and more than 75 guns are being sold, and somebody walks in and says, hey, I'm a terrorist from Al-Qaeda. I want to buy. All right. I got this nice little drug operation going in Mexico. I'd like to buy, 45 or 50 AK-47. Let's ask Noel Flasterstein. Maybe he has the answer. He's an attorney and host of The Gun Show. His website, gunrightsforyou.com. Noel, what were these idiots thinking?
Well, I wouldn't call them idiots. The people that voted against the proposed bills that were put up before them in the Senate were, I would consider, champions of the Constitution. I mean, we do have a Second Amendment right. Harry Reid.
So you think that all the rights that are in the Constitution are absolute, that your right to free speech is absolute? You can run down the street absolutely naked as an expression of free speech, screaming at the top of your lungs, and that's just fine. You can run into a crowded theater and start screaming, there's a bomb in here, there's a bomb, and that's just fine. I beg your pardon?
What's that?
I'm done.
Obviously the First Amendment, running down naked, I don't see how you, analogize that with the Second Amendment.
Well, it was brought before the Supreme Court, actually, whether nudity in the case of, Linda Lovelace and Deep Throat, whether nudity is a form of free speech expression. And, in fact, whether obscenity, whether pornography is. And with the Second Amendment, it numerous times was brought before the Supreme Court, is there an absolute right to own a gun? And the Supreme Court has never, never, ever, zero, and you know this as well as I do, Neil, said there is an absolute right. There can be no limits whatsoever. Never said that. Just like there are no limits on any other right. There's this thing called responsibilities that go with rights.
Laws prohibiting drugs doesn't stop people from using drugs. We have laws from people.
You're talking about laws. I'm talking about rights. You started out talking about rights. Please tell me where it says that there is a right for a person who has been convicted of killing people with guns to go out and buy a gun.
Well, I would agree with you there. When you
well, then why wouldn't you vote for this this bill yesterday?
But I have a right as an individual to own an assault rifle if I want to.
Not if you've been convicted of beating your wife, at least under this legislation.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Go ahead.
I said, under this legislation, you do not have a right to buy an assault weapon if you have been convicted of beating your wife. Why do you have a problem with that?
Right now, anybody who's been convicted of a misdemeanor, felony domestic violence, cannot purchase a firearm.
That is not true.
Thanks to the work of Senator Lautenberg, people that, have these issues are forever prohibited, and some of them are not necessarily violent.
But there is no mechanism to stop them, and they can walk into any gun show.
It's 99% chance it's going to be granted, because judges are going to err on the side of caution, and I assure you, as a person that has fought these things, has actually sought to enforce them to protect clients, sometimes, people trying to seek them aren't necessarily being forthright with the court, and this has a big impact on a person's ability and their rights to own and have firearms, which is a constitutional protected right. Even in cases where these alleged batterers haven't even been arrested, or no medical or doctor records to support it.
Okay, Neil, so what you're saying basically is, if we have a law, it might be somewhat successful at keeping guns out of the hands of crazies, but it's not going to be entirely successful. So why even bother? Okay, I got that. Why do we even bother having laws against bank robbery? People still rob banks.
Well, we're trying to affect behavior, and by having a law against bank robbery, that decreases the likelihood that it'll occur.
But then why not have a law that says if you're crazy or you're a killer or you're a wife beater, you can't have a damn gun?
We already have those laws. What are you talking about?
You can't go to a gun show and buy one.
The laws that they were trying to propose want to take law-abiding citizens' rights.
Because, Noel,
they want to restrict me from buying an assault rifle. Why are we talking assault rifle? Why aren't we talking machine guns? Those weren't on.
Nobody is talking.
Why not? I think those are much more deadly.
Nice try at changing the subject here, Noel, but this legislation specifically said that any organized group, any gun show, basically, where there's more than 75 weapons being sold, falls under the purview of this. Less than that, crazies can still buy guns. But, I mean, this was full of loopholes. But it was a beginning. It was a simple step. More than 75 guns being sold, then they at least have to do a background check and make sure that the person buying the gun is not a convicted felon, a person who has been treated for mental illness, or a person who has violent criminal past that, like I said, the wife beater thing. It's a cliche, but I think it stands quite well because a lot of women are killed by their husbands and more often than not by guns. And I just don't get your outrage I just don't get it. Can you explain it to me?
I will explain it to you. Limiting my access as a law-abiding American.
Nobody's limiting your access.
The firearms. Limiting my access.
Nobody's limiting your access.
Limit the criminals. Because what's going to happen? You're going to say, no, you can't own a gun anymore.
Are you saying, Neil, that by having to wait, by having to wait 3 minutes for a background check, you're being limited?
This legislation is slowly designed to take away our rights as individuals.
Oh, come on.
To arm ourselves.
That is nonsense.
Hey.
That is absolute nonsense. In fact, well, that's the lie that the president was referring to. Noel Flasterstein, gunrightsforyou.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Noel, if you're still on the line, I apologize if I called you a liar. I didn't intend to, but the NRA is saying that.
Okay.
The president called him out. Noel, thanks for being with us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to pick up your calls here in just a second, but I still don't understand this. I mean, a couple of weeks ago we had fun with the smallpenisgunclub.com, which for a while was, pointing to Ted Cruz's website, and now I'm not sure where it's pointing, but in any case, it's and .org. But there's just some bizarre people out there. There's all these senators whose names I just shared with you who basically told us all that we can go to hell. And then there's guys who will just explicitly tell people to go to hell, even people who are the parents of children who have been murdered by assault weapons. For example, in Minnesota, there's a guy named Bob Davis on the radio. Here's what he had to say yesterday, the day before, a couple days ago, whatever it was, recently. Here he is.
Deal with it and don't force me to lose my liberty, which is a greater tragedy than your loss. I'm sick and tired of seeing these victims trotted out, given rides on Air Force One, hauled into the Senate well, and everyone is just afraid. They're terrified of these victims.
Used.
I would stand in front of them and tell them,
they're being used.
Go to hell.
Right. Bob Davis wants to tell the parents of the children who were massacred in Newtown to go to hell. Noel Flasterstein thinks that, and he's not here to defend himself. I shouldn't, but he did make a statement, and I'm sure he'd stand by, that waiting for 2 or 3 minutes for a check to come back from the FBI saying, yeah, this guy can buy a gun, which, by the way, happens to you every time you book a flight. The airline checks the no-fly list. They don't tell you. I mean, you don't have a screen that says, please wait while we check the no-fly list. Instead, you see the logo for the airline for 20, 30 seconds. But that's what they're doing. That waiting 2 or 3 minutes for a background check is somehow inhibiting his right to own a gun. Really? Really? Greg in Placidas, New Mexico. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Tom, I'm not suggesting that all Republican senators are cowardly hypocrites, but if you go through that list, I'll bet you'll find a good number of them who are all up in arms, excuse the expression, just a couple months ago over Fast and Furious.
Yeah, probably. Susan Collins, by the way, Republican from Maine, she voted in favor of having checks. Senator Kirk from Illinois, Republican from Illinois. It's Mark Kirk, isn't it? I think so. These are the Republicans who had some courage, who had some cojones or whatever the politically correct phrase is. John McCain, the Republican from Arizona. Who has been known to defy his own party. voted in favor of this. I don't see, I'm going through the list here, I don't see, oh, Pat Toomey, of course, he helped negotiate this, the Republican from Pennsylvania. That's it. All the rest of the Republicans voted no. And, yeah, I'm guessing you're probably absolutely right. Greg, thanks a lot for the call. Dale in Bangor, Michigan. I didn't know there was a Bangor in Michigan. I grew up there. Hey, Dale, where is it?
You grew up in Bangor, Michigan?
No, I grew up in Michigan. I never knew there was a Bangor there. I thought there was a Bangor in Maine, but where's Bangor, Michigan?
We're west of Kalamazoo, between Kalamazoo and South Haven, right on the lake.
Okay, I know where that is. Well, in any case, thanks for calling. What's up?
Here in Michigan, we have automatic registration of all handguns. You can't transfer a handgun from a citizen to a citizen without having a register. You cannot purchase a long gun from a dealer without having a background check. If you've ever been convicted of any assault, if you've ever done any felony, if you have a felony conviction of anything, domestic violence, you can't purchase a weapon of any sort.
Yeah, that's all true, and that's all the law, as far as I know. But here's the thing. If you live in Michigan, Dale, and you do, and you go on the Internet to a site that sells weapons over the Internet, they're not going to check you out. If you go to a gun show, if you drive over to Indiana or Illinois or maybe even in Michigan, go to a gun show and go to an unregistered dealer, they're not going to ask you, you know, are you a killer? Are you friends with Al-Qaeda? Are you a drug dealer?
I'm not.
And that's what this law was going to do. All this law was going to do was establish background checks. This was just background checks. Are these crazy people?
You have to have a background. I can't go. I live less than 10 miles or about 15 miles from Indiana. I can't go to Indiana and purchase a weapon.
Because?
I cannot legally go to a yard sale in Indiana and purchase a weapon because I'm not a resident of that state.
Yeah.
We've got lots of
but
laws
the fact,
on the books.
But, the, fa- that, but the fact of the matter is that if nobody's checking, it's like, you know, if you're 14 years old, you can't go to Hertz and rent a car. But if somebody passed a law saying it's illegal for Hertz to ask to see your driver's license before you rent the car, if it's illegal for Hertz to do a background check and find out if you're actually qualified to drive a car, then 14-year-olds could walk into Hertz and rent a car.
Well, I understand that there's not a real good comparison there.
I think it's apples to apples.
Poor man. What state can I purchase a weapon in without a background check?
In any state where there's a gun show going on.
From a dealer.
This, you know, everybody acknowledges that dealers are registered. You know, the dealers are fine. This was to close the gun show loophole. And if you don't get that, Dale, please read the legislation. And if you do get that, stop trying to fool my listeners. Larry in Charleston, Arkansas. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Yes, Tom. Hey, I wanted to tell you how I feel about the four Democrats that voted against it. I think there were four of them, if I'm correct.
Yep.
We got Pryor down here in Arkansas.
Yep.
I'm going to start telling you why I actually liked that vote, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 65, and I was tied up in that Vietnam era draft deal. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was in high school there back in 66, fixed to graduate in May. Yeah, I got this number six lottery number. I was going to have to go to the military.
Yep.
You know? So I just finally got around to volunteering for the Air Force, to having to go in the Army. Well, you know, I was fooled there, Tom. You know, I was taught that the federal government wouldn't do anything against my best interest, you know. It wasn't like I actually liked going in that military.
You know,
thing.
Larry.
I wasn't about to volunteer.
Larry, what's your point?
I'm going to get around to your gut control here. Basically.
What's your point here, Larry?
Okay, well, I was fooled, you know. I was fooled in my education, which mainly came from...
A lot of us were fooled about a lot of things when we were young. What's your point about why you think that it was a good thing that your Democratic senator voted against this bill?
If you'll let me talk, I'll get around to explaining.
Well, there's 12 other people who would like to get their thoughts in here, too, and you're rambling here, Larry. Get to the point, please.
Okay, the left wing was protecting me back then. They were protecting me even for my own government. They didn't like them corporate people, too, that were lobbying. They didn't like either one of them, not
right.
the government.
Okay, what does this have to do with Mark Pryor voting against? Okay, Larry, I got it. Thanks. Thanks a lot for the call. Dave in Hot Springs Village, from Arkansas to Arkansas. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, my God. Worlds apart, Tom. I'm in an enclave here that's full of Yankees, so that guy is the kind of guy I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy who was just calling. Lands, and he's the kind of guy that Mark Pryor is pandering to. You know, if you've got any hint of statesmanship about you, you try to educate these people. You don't pander to them.
Well, you know, on the one hand, an elected representative, and I think many of them take this very seriously, their job is to represent their district, not necessarily to do what they think is the best thing, on the one hand. On the other hand, they have to have a moral compass. They have to do what they believe is in the best interest of the nation, even if their state is opposed to it. And that's a really, really tough balancing act for a lot of members of Congress. It's got to be. I mean, it's just, you know, as a human being, it's got to be. But, you know, Mark Pryor down in Arkansas, the Democrat in Arkansas, voting to say, oh, no, we're not going to do background checks. We're going to let terrorists buy guns and gun shows. I don't think he's pandering to the previous caller or anybody else from Arkansas. Who's opposed to the gun? Who is in favor of the gun show loophole? Because 75% of NRA members, 75% of NRA members want background checks. 80% of Republicans want background checks. 90% of Americans want background checks. He was pandering to the gun manufacturers, in my humble opinion. This has to be about the money and nothing else.
Well, I agree with that. He's pandering to the NRA.
Yeah.
But the least he can do, I mean, a representative in the House of Representatives is a little more parochial. The guy in the Senate is supposed to have a big picture. And
yeah.
Pryor hasn't
right.
shown that.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
And absolutely, I already violated your appropriateness business by sending him an email and calling him a coward. Maybe I should send another one and retract it. I don't know.
Well, so, you know, that's you should see my email. Nothing. That's nothing. But it is good on you for letting, you know, I'm not, you know, specifically addressing calling anybody a coward. Although, frankly, I think it was a cowardly act. I would say that the people who voted, particularly the Democrats, the three Democrats or the four Democrats who voted no, did behave like cowards. And that's sad. And I think all of the Republicans who voted against closing the gun show loophole behaved like cowards, too. Dave, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And, you know, I always say get out there, get active. We're going to check in with Tim Carpenter in just a minute. Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the rest of us. And I am so honored and pleased to have in the studio the guy who, you know, damn near every day, Tim, I got to tell you, you know, at least four or five times a week, I am telling people, you know, people call up and go, I don't like my rap. I don't mean it. And I'm like, what are you doing about it? Well, I don't want to do anything except complain. I'm saying, get over to PDAmerica.org and join up. Do something.
You.
Get involved, damn it.
Thank you for that.
It's my civic duty, frankly. I mean, I think that I have a responsibility to do something and not just to sit and whine and complain. I am so, you know, half the time I listen to talk radio, I just hear whining and complaining. It's like, you know, what value is that? So you're doing something. You're here in town because there's something going on. Tell me about this. Robin Hood tax.
Well, first of all, your shout outs to PDA, I want to let you know that it resonates. Every time I've been on in the last 3 months, we've had a spike at PDAmerica.org, and I thank you for that. Folks today that went to their member of Congress heard about what we were up to last month on this show. Yesterday, 100 folks in their district offices went to Congress and said, enough of this austerity. We need prosperity. We want to get on with the Robin Hood tax. We've talked about this,
right.
A small tax on Wall Street. Congressman Ellison introduced it yesterday. We have a bill now, H.R. 1578. So we were in district offices asking members to co-sponsor. And today, folks are getting on the phone with Credo Action Network, calling offices. Not everybody can physically get to the office, but we can all pick up the phone. So today, pick up the phone, call your district office, H.R. 676, which is Congressman John Conyers, Enhanced Medicare for All, Single Payer. We want their members to co-sponsor.
This is Medicare Part E, E for everybody.
Well, yeah.
It's what I used to call it.
Healthcare was a human right.
Yeah.
And then Keith Ellison, of course, we've talked about this. Keith was with us with PDA when we had our Progressive Central in January around the inaugural. But this is very important. It's to begin this whole discussion of hands-off Social Security. There's a revenue stream through a carbon tax and a Robin Hood tax. Let's get on with it. Congressman Keith Ellison with Raul Grijalva, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, is leading that fight. So we have to make sure that our president hears us loud and clear. God knows we've been disappointed enough. We've got to make sure that he understands hands-off Social Security, get on with taxing Wall Street, and let's get to work on Main Street.
Yeah, yeah. And so what I'm hearing is you're in town. You're lobbying. You got people lobbying all over
we're
the country.
Educating. We're educating members
yes,
of Congress.
Yes, lobbying would be
we
the wrong word. I'm sorry.
We can't compete with K Street.
No. And nor do I think you'd want to, frankly. Because nobody's writing big checks to you to say, hey, you know.
Our big checks last night at our gathering were $45 and $50, and we're very grateful.
Yeah. And pdamerica.org, you know, a $25, $40, $50 check, a $10 check.
Difference.
It actually does make a difference. I know. I know you guys. And so what I'm hearing is that you're out, you're knocking on doors, you're talking to members of Congress. Keith Ellison, one of our champions and heroes, and Raul Grijalva and John Conyers, three pieces of legislation, it sounds like. Number one, the Robin Hood tax. This is the one-half of 1% tax on every security transaction. In other words, every stock sale. And if correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. And that would generate billions of dollars.
Most experts say $350 billion.
Yeah, $350 billion a year.
Yes.
Which is mind-boggling.
Yeah,
I mean,
make
that's
it
enough
clear.
That's enough to pay for health care for everybody. I mean, that's mind-boggling. And it also would minimize many of the abuses of Wall Street because it would put a little bit of sand in the gears of the high-speed, the high-frequency trading, the robotic trading.
And Europe gets this. They're moving in this direction.
Oh, yeah. The Europeans are doing this.
So we have a bill, again, when you call, you want H.R. 1579, just introduced yesterday by Congressman Keith Ellison. Our goal is to get co-sponsors on that bill. We hit 100. We get a vote.
Okay. So that's the Robin Hood tax.
Correct.
Secondly, you've got John Conyers, 676. It's been 676 year after year, hasn't
you
it?
You bet.
That's
keep
sure
coming.
Does sound familiar. For years, I've been.
We're going to keep coming until we get it back. We just left him.
And this is that health care is a human right.
Enhanced Medicare for All.
Yes. Enhanced Medicare for All. Okay. And then the third is?
The letter that we talked about last month, and we've been banging on doors. We have 41 members of Congress now that have said to the president, do not touch Social Security under any means. Do not raise the retirement age. No change CPI. We want Social Security as is. 41 members of Congress have signed that. Alan Grace and Mark Tocano out of Riverside, Alan Grace out of Florida, have authored that letter. We need you to have their members sign that same letter. So those are the three asks today.
So three simple, straightforward things. You can find them all at pdamerica.org, as in Progressive Democrat. ProgressiveDemocratsOfAmerica.org, and for the record, Progressive Democrats of America has no affiliation whatsoever with the Democratic Party. In fact, there are days of the week, and many of them, when the Democratic Party would just as soon kick you guys right flat out of town.
We are the insurgents. The one quick thing, Tom, if I could, is to thank New Mexico. I just got a call before I came on. They met with their member of Congress. It looks like two members of Congress out there in New Mexico are going to sign the letter. These are examples of small-D democracy, connecting the dots from you here, getting outside of Washington, and really banging on those doors. So it does. It really does. This does make a difference. You have a choice, as you said. You can sit back and be cynical and not be engaged or get in the fight.
Right.
There are, as we say, there are two parties, regardless of what folks say. We need a real second party. We want the Democrats to be that party.
Right.
We want a progressive Democratic governing majority.
Right. So it's the inside-outside strategy. It is pushing the Democratic Party on the inside, in other words, calling them, contacting them, showing up in their offices, congratulating them when they do things right, like Keith Ellison has done, like John Conyers has done.
It's wonderful when we get that
opportunity. Yeah. Amen. Amen, brother. And then the outside strategy, the insurgency strategy, standing out, and oh, you had a gig last night at Busboys and Poets, or you got a bunch of people together, you're doing these things around the country. Standing out in front of the White House, standing in front of Congress, standing in front of the Supreme Court. You've done all these things. you know, public demonstrations, affiliations of National Nurses United and others, and making things happen.
And Saturday with National Nurses United, the Robin Hood Alliance will be in the streets here in D.C. We invite folks to come out and join with us. We're going to take this campaign out of the halls of Congress today, stop the education, get back to the street heat. That starts on Saturday. All the information, National Nurses United, I know you had Gene Ross on last night on the TV side, pdamerica.org, it's all there. All we need folks to do is, when they're done listening to the show, turn it off and get engaged.
There you go. And if you're a multitasker, you can pull it up on your computer screen, PD, like Progressive Democrats, America, pdamerica.org right now, and check it out. You can see all the details. You can participate. You can
get signed up. We want to hear from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not selling your mailing lists to anybody, and you're not going to get spammed or any of this other kind of nonsense.
You will hear from folks in your neighborhood that are making a difference. PDA was formed with the belief that a small community of group of folks working together can really build something, and we're in the process. As you know, Tom, you've been with us for some time. By getting on the mailing list, you'll get in touch with folks in your neighborhood as well as on the phone.
This is building community.
That's at the end of the day, it is all about building that community. Yeah. And as we often say, Margaret Mead brings us all the way back to never underestimate a small core group of dedicated people. Those are the folks that are delivering letters right now and on the phones.
It is so the opposite of the NRA. You know, you give your information to the NRA and suddenly all the gun manufacturers are calling. Anyhow, Tim Carpenter, pdamerica.org. Sir, thank you.
As always, thank you, Tom.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. We've been talking about on and off here throughout this first hour about what happened in Congress yesterday. Went through the list of the names of the people who voted to say, oh, yeah, sure, terrorists, give them guns. Crazy people, give them guns. Wife beaters, husband beater, physical, whatever. Give them guns. Yeah, no problem. You know, we don't need to regulate this stuff. We don't. There should be. Well, anyhow. Patricia Mache knows this stuff probably better than any of us. She is a survivor of the Tucson, Arizona shooting that injured Gabby Giffords. She saved the lives of, we don't know how many yet, but never will, but saved the lives of others by grabbing the third clip away from Jared Loeffner as he was reloading. She was in the Senate last night. Her website, demandaction.org, and mayorsagainstillegalguns.org. Patricia Mache, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate your having me.
It is an honor and a pleasure to have you with us. Yesterday, I'm usually not a fan of people interrupting Congress. Certainly, you know, the guy who yelled, you lie at the president was rather shameful. But you spoke out yesterday in a way that brought a rebuke from the vice president. You want to tell us about that?
Well, I'm not usually the person that's disruptive either, but I went from being very sad to very mad. And as we know, mad can cause you to do things that you might not do otherwise. And in my case, I don't have a gun, so I wouldn't go from being sad to mad and use force. So I used the force of my voice. My husband always told me I should have been a drill sergeant instead of a whatever it is I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I used my drill sergeant voice in a moment of anger to let what I think are a bunch of soulless senators that have no compassion know how I felt.
And you said shame on you.
I did say shame on you.
I congratulate you for that.
Thank you so much.
I congratulate you for your courage in saying that. I'm not sure that I would have had the courage to say that. You know,
I think if you would have seen six people dead on the sidewalk and 13 more injured, you might have had the initiative. I call it initiative more than courage in that case.
Right. So when we're talking with Patricia Mache, she basically stopped Jared Lee Loeffner from killing more people as he was reloading. The fellow who shot Gabby Giffords and killed, what is it, six other people?
Six people and injured another 12 besides Gabby.
Right. And Patricia is sometimes referred to as the hero of Tucson. I understand also you describe them as soulless, I would describe them as cowards. People who voted against just simple background checks yesterday, while they were saying that no, crazy people and violent people and terrorists and drug dealers must not be asked whether they are any of those categories or any other questions. They must not pass a background test, a check of any sort, in order to buy a weapon which is has a single purpose, which is killing things, principally people. Apparently, you yourself were subject to a background check last night.
I did sort of call it that. We were escorted very kindly and gently. A gentleman that...
This is after you said shame on you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We were escorted from the gallery. There was a female officer also. They all had a job to do, and they did it gently and kindly and courteously. So we do have some very good law enforcement people. And
we do.
We did have to surrender our driver's license. We had to repeat everything that was on the driver's license, question by question. We had to say why we were here, when we got into D.C., when we were planning on leaving. So it did end up being sort of a little background check.
So you actually went through a far more exhaustive background check than somebody who had murdered his wife, you know, 10 years earlier, just gotten out of prison, and shows up at a gun show and wants to buy a gun would have to go through.
If he chose not to go through a gun dealer, you're right. I don't know.
But even if he went through a gun dealer, he wouldn't have to ask. He wouldn't have to read back every single thing on his driver's license, would he?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think he would. I've never tried to.
Or explain why he was there, or how long he was going to stay, or anything else. It's I just find this so ironic.
Well, you know, here's another comparison to a background check that we like to use in Arizona. I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but if you go in to Walgreens. Walmart, let's use Walmart. You go into Walmart to buy a package of Sudafed, you have to surrender your driver's license so they can look at it. You have to sign your name. You have to say that you're not going to use this drug for some illicit purpose. But right. You can go over to the sporting goods shop at Walmart. Oh, this is not a very good one.
Yeah.
You don't, if you went outside and bought a gun from a guy in the parking lot, you don't need anything. You just say how many guns you want, put down your money, and walk away. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I had a debate earlier with a pro-gun guy, and I said, this is like passing a law that says that it's illegal for Hertz or Avis to ask people how old they are before they rent them a car. So a 13-year-old could walk in and say, I'd like to rent a car, please. And the Hertz and Avis person can't say, well, you know, are you old enough to drive? You know, it's like, come on. It's like, you know, yeah, you may have a right, but there are responsibilities associated with those rights. You know, you have a, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The correlation we like to use is if there was two lines at the airport and one of them was security and the other one, if you didn't think you could pass security, please go over to this side. We'll get you on the airplane. No problem.
Right. Right. It makes no sense. I'm assuming since you were in the gallery there in the Senate yesterday that you, being in Washington, D.C., probably had talked to some of these members of Congress. Did you talk to any of the members of Congress who ended up voting on the side of the terrorists and the crazy people and the wife beaters and the murderers?
We actually did. Those are the senators we asked for audiences with, either them or their staffers. We talked to the ones that were still undecidedly by announcement. I believe they probably made up their minds before we got there, but like Senator Heitkamp from North Dakota.
Yeah, we had great hopes for Heidi Heitkamp.
Well, you know, I read in our newspaper or online not too long ago that she didn't think her state needed additional regulation, federal regulation. And, you know, I started thinking about the difference between Arizona and North Dakota. And senators really don't just represent their state. They represent the whole country. And I thought, you know, we don't worry too much about flooding in the desert. We get it every once in a while, but what if I said, you know, I don't think we need any more federal dollars or federal regulations about flooding and flood control in North Dakota. You know, it just doesn't make sense that she could consider it just another federal regulation for her state. So I'm very disappointed, and I really do think she lost her soul yesterday.
Yeah, it's really sad. Although, I got to tell you, and I've been in North Dakota, the right-wing talk radio infrastructure there is really, really solid. She's got a lot up against her. And not to, and so does Mark Begich, and so Max Baucus. I never seriously thought he was a Democrat. Mark Pryor, I don't know about, but I think it's so sad. What advice would you? We have just a little less than a minute here left, Patricia Major. What advice for our? In fact, where should our listeners go? What should they do right now? In 10
you
seconds.
Should go to your senators. You should call them and say, I'm embarrassed. You've embarrassed our state by not voting for a simple, reasonable, enforced.
Because there will be another chance, you think?
There will. We are energized. The NRA, our senators should stop trying to get A ratings from NRA and try to get them from their constituents.
Amen.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Patricia Mache, demandaction.org is the website. Patricia, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program, and Nardine Jeffries. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
Nardine Jeffries. Your daughter was murdered in a drive-by mass shooting in December of 2010.
March 30th, 2010.
March 30th. Thank you very much. Oh, in D.C., in Washington, D.C. That's where the... And your website is OccupyTheNRA.com. Can you tell us your thoughts on what happened yesterday, where you were, what was going on, and about this OccupyTheNRA.com?
Well, the OccupyTheNRA.com is not my website. That's actually Aaron Black's website.
I see.
But my thoughts were it was very disgusting. I just thought it was a slap in the face of all the victims and future victims that will have an early demise to gun violence.
Mm-hmm. Nardine, Jeffries, you're the victim. I mean, your daughter was the victim of a mass shooting. Wasn't it a bunch of guys with AK-47s in a truck who just did a drive-by shooting kind of thing? Do I have that right?
No, not exactly.
Okay. Can you tell me about it?
Four individuals in a rented van. One had an AK-47, mm-hmm. one had a 9mm, mm-hmm. and one had, I think it was a 45 or 48, some other type of semi-automatic weapon, and they were out to seek revenge on the mourners of a funeral that my daughter and others had attended earlier that day. So they had killed an individual a week before and injured others and were out for more blood and saw the group of young people standing on the sidewalk gathering, listening to iPods, conversing, doing what millions of Americans do every day. You know, it wasn't a lot of people say wrong place, wrong time. And I don't like that statement because my daughter was in her neighborhood, in her community, where I'm a homeowner, a taxpaying citizen, and a law-abiding citizen. So she was exactly where she belonged.
Yep.
The violent offenders were not where they belonged.
Yep. Amen. And since that time, you have become a real activist for never again in this. And tell us about your activism. What advice do you have to our listeners and our viewers?
Well, first I'd like to say that my advice is just to not give up. I don't want, you know, I think a lot of people seem to get confused with the Second Amendment rights and feel like myself and a lot of the advocates are trying to, you know, infringe on your constitutional rights, which that is not the case at all. I just think it's kind of sad that you have to go through the proper channels to get a driver's license and have, you know, proof of insurance and go through all of these steps to drive a vehicle. But when it comes to a gun, something that takes so many lives, you can purchase that as easily as buying a candy bar, and no one seems to have a problem with that.
Hmm. And what, in your mind, is the best that we can do about this? What should we be doing about this?
Well, it's a lot of different things that should be done. I mean, we definitely need to keep, first of all, we need a lot more activities in some areas. There needs to be, in my opinion, more things to occupy young people and engage them in more constructive activities. You know, once you start closing down a lot of community centers and you start taking away music and art and, you know, the physical activities out of schools as well as vocational programs, I think you kind of are leaving them with nothing but idle hands and idle minds. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of, you know, parents have to work, and a lot of parents are not, or children are not into family incomes, you know, two-parent incomes of families. I mean, and you have the single parents. I was a single mother, but did that mean I left my daughter to just roam the streets and do whatever she wanted? No, there was a lot of structure. I took her to school. I picked her up from school. I was there with her. I monitored her with things. I gave her permission that day to walk down to the corner and drop off a backpack. So I just feel like, you know, as a society, it doesn't cost anything to smile. It doesn't cost us anything to say hello, to be pleasant. You don't know how that makes a difference to that next person. That might be the nicest thing they've heard all day, maybe in their lifetime. You know, I just think we need to go back to being a much more conscious and, you know, compassionate society. And we definitely need to do background checks and make sure mentally ill people do not get guns, and very violent offenders. Like I said, you know, it, you take their rights away when they're arrested. But when they come back into society, you know, they can't vote, and it's certain, you know, it's certain things they cannot do because they're rights have been taken away from them once they become a felon. But it seems that, you know, the right to take a life has not been taken away from them. That's very accessible. And, you know, we have to come at various angles. Like I said, engage the young people, you know, give them the belief that you can dream. You know, it's sad when I talk to young people and they tell me that they haven't planned their life beyond the age of 18 because they don't think they're going to live beyond that. And that's scary to me and very sad. And I think we as a society, as human beings, need to continue to reach back and reach out and reach, you know, reach everyone. We can do, if, you know, we can't change society as a whole, not one person, but if we as an individual can make a difference in that little world and that space that we actually occupy and the people that are surrounded in our little circle, guess what? That's where change begins.
Yeah. As the father of three children, I cannot imagine your loss. I can't even go there. And I have to just tell you how much I honor the work that you're doing, Nardine Jeffries, and your speaking out, your activism, your voice, your sanity, your compassion. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And please keep up the great work. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the website associated with that Nardine is most associated with is OccupyTheNRA.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, a lot going on. And by the way, there's other things going on in the world as well. We still, CNN, I think, has stopped. I've stopped looking. I haven't checked CNN since yesterday. I have no idea what they're reporting. Poor CNN. As far as we know, you know, there have been no new arrests or anything like that in the Boston case. There was, tragically, this is the kind of thing that happens. When it was reported that it was a dark-skinned man who was being taken into custody, there were two Muslim women in Boston walking down the street wearing hijabs, wearing the head scarves. And a white man walked up to one of them and started punching her in the back, screaming the F word at her and telling her that her and her blanking Muslim friends were behind the bombing. And he had just heard it on the news, and he was just beside himself. And she just stood there for a minute or two and let him basically beat her up. And he got it out of his system and he left, and she called the police. And by the time they got there, he was gone. And The story's over at rawstory.com. You get all the details. But, you know, this is one of the reasons why it's important to be pretty clear when you're reporting the news and to keep things in context to the extent that you can. Meanwhile, a Keystone XL pipeline hearing is going on, and Nora in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF, Minnesota's Progressive Voice, is at the Keystone XL hearing right now. Do I have that right, Nora?
Oh, that's correct. We spent the night with 50 people in a bus running through a spring blizzard, which started out as a horrendous rainstorm in Minneapolis. But this morning it was a big, huge blizzard, but of course now it's all melting down. But there's about 1,000 people here. I'm so grateful for the people that are here testifying. It's very heart-rending and heart-wrenching things that a lot of people are saying, and the native people that are telling the real down, you know, respect to earth type of consciousness.
Right.
And, but there's a whole bunch of these scary guys, all these young, big guys that are standing around in clumps and act like they're so desperate that there's no other job but to kill the earth. They make me get culture shock.
Yeah.
I get culture shock going to the suburbs. So look at, I didn't even know I could handle Nebraska.
Nora, but you say here, where is here? Where should be, if people want to show up for this Keystone hearing, where do they go in Minneapolis?
Oh no, this is at, we rode down here and it's at Grand Island, Nebraska. It's one day. People flew in, a whole bunch of buses from all over.
Okay.
It's the one hearing by the State Department to hear opinions on the Keystone XL pipeline.
Okay, so you're in Grand Island, Nebraska right now. It's just Minneapolis is your home.
My home is Minneapolis. I'm not in there. I rode in the bus from Minneapolis. Grand Island, Nebraska. And it's the place where the sandhill cranes and thousands of other species, or hundreds or thousands, all come here on their migration.
Wow. So, Nora, what is your advice for people who can't, you know, just like hop in their private jet and show up there in an hour and a half, but would like to help out, would like their voice to be heard with regard to the Keystone XL pipeline? And what, you know, two quick questions, I guess. Number one, you know, what's your takeaway from the meeting there? There's 1,000 people. That's good news. You know, what are you hearing? What's your sense of how things are going? And number two, what can people do?
Well, I know right now, today, they're streaming it, and they can go on NET. It's Nebraska Educational Television.
Okay.
And watch that.
All right.
And I know Sierra Club and 350.org are doing a lot of the organizing of this. I know we just need to stand together to protect all life and Mother Earth.
Okay.
So. And this Keystone Pipeline is where I draw the line. But I wanted to bring up an issue that I'm kind of disturbed about. And I know you don't like talking about other people, so I'm just going to say it. Because last night when we were on the bus coming down here, Mike Malloy is on the radio saying that there's no hope in Barack Obama and John Kerry are going to do this thing unless we get 10 million people to go somewhere at one time. But you know what? I can't take that idea that there's no hope. And I think that's maybe an end of winter feeling that a lot of people are getting taken over by.
It may be. Nora, I'm going to thank you for the call. I just Mike is a good friend and he does great radio. I can't have a debate with or a discussion about another talk show host on my program, particularly when they're not here. I mean, if they're here, you know, we can do it. But Nora, thanks for the report, and good to hear from you. John in Harrison, Arkansas. Hey, John. Are you seriously going to tell me that Gabby Giffords got what she deserved?
No, that's not what I said. What I said was she should have had security for her own business. I mean,
she did. She had two security officers there. One of them was killed.
Because the local police department should have been known. They should have been in the crowd. Anybody that's worked security and been police officers and other things and involved in that type of thing know that they have to be out there. Barack Obama doesn't go anywhere without security around him.
To the best of my knowledge, the police did know that she was there.
Well, they should have made it their business to be among in the crowd for their own
There was armed security in that crowd. There were several armed people in that crowd. And frankly, it's been long enough, John, that I don't remember all the details of it. But the bottom line is that the woman who ultimately stopped Jared Loftner, was just on this program an hour ago, and she stopped him because he had to pause to reload, and he was able to kill the six people that he had and wound the dozen that he had at that point because he was able to use such large ammunition clips.
Well, absolutely, but see, you can change an ammunition clip in any weapon in less than a second. I can do it in less than a second, and that's 10 rounds or less. I mean, it doesn't make a difference in combat. They tape them together top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know, that's type of things done that way. But I'm just telling you that...
But there is a moment of vulnerability, and you and I both know this, when you are changing your clip. There is a moment of vulnerability where somebody could jump on top of you, and you cannot pull off a shot.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what happened to Jared Lee Loftner. And that's one of the reasons why... You know, having a 30-shot clip or a 50-shot clip in a theater of war might make a certain amount of sense, as much as I'm not a big fan of war. But having it in a shopping mall in Tucson, Arizona, there's no damn reason that should be.
Well, the problem is a lot of those clips, now there's a lot of them out there. But the Second Amendment, like you said, you're talking about, just getting to that too, the Second Amendment never was meant for hunting. And it also says shall not infringe. And, you know, Congress and things, gun control, they've got a lot of gun control right now. You don't go buy one from any licensed gun dealer without going through a background check. I know. I've been through them. And
no, but you can buy one from a gun show without a background check. And that's all they were trying to do yesterday was close that loophole. And these cowards, these Republican, by and large Republican cowards, there were a couple of Republicans who stood tall, Pat Toomey, Mark Kirk, John McCain and Susan Collins, but other than them, all the other Republicans in the United States Senate, they all proved themselves yesterday to be gutless, spineless cowards. Charles in Chicago. Hey, Charles, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's
up? I took a drop comment off a word, and while I was driving... Hello?
Yeah, Charles, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. My daughter just walked in. Tom, I just want to compliment you on having the grace to deal with all these brain stems who called in with these twisted, they're beyond Mars, out there views of the Constitution and rights and everything.
But Charles, they are our neighbors, they are our coworkers, and in many cases, they are our relatives. We have to deal with them with a certain level of humanity and respect if we ever hope to have this nation work.
Indeed, but you know, the respect thing goes both ways. I've heard callers berate you, and I feel bad for you because of their views.
Hey,
and also,
I'm a big guy. I can take
it. The lady who was on your show who said, shame on you, I agree with her. But and when they checked her at the end of it all for saying that, what happened with Ted Nugent when he went to see the president?
Yeah, in fact, Joe Madison yesterday, I think it was on his show, maybe it was the day before, Joe just does an absolutely brilliant radio program. And a good man and a good friend, and he's been having this countdown now ever since Barack Obama was inaugurated, because Ted Nugent said that if Obama became president within 1 year, that Nugent himself would either be dead or in jail. And I think that, you know, we're coming up on that time. Well, actually, we're not. It hasn't been. It's not November yet. So, but Joe was like, you know, come on, Ted. You know what's it going to be?
And what did the FBI say to him when he, the gentleman who...
I think what they said to Ted Nugent was, oh, you're on the board of the NRA, you know, would you like some caviar?
I'd imagine tea if it's social and friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you got all my blessings. I'm a listener to you, and I've called a few times, and I just want to tell you thank you.
Thank you, Charles. And thanks for listening to WCPT. Please support the advertisers of that radio station. It's a great station. Anthony in Eureka, California. Oh, we're out of time? Anthony, I got to put you on hold. Hang on just a second. We'll catch you on the other side of the break here. But we are running right smack dab into the time machine, hitting me in the face, as it does from time to time. Lamar Alexander. Mr. Barrasso, Ms. Ayat from New Hampshire, Mr. Bacchus, Mr. Begich, Mr. Blunt, Mr. Boozman, Mr. Burr, Mr. Chambliss, these soulless cowards, Mr. Coates, Mr. Coburn, Mr. Cochran, Mr. Wicker, Mr. Vitter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
David Vitter, I wonder if he thinks that prostitutes should be registered, but guns shouldn't be. I'm just wondering. So here we've got Rand Paul, the man who would be president, saying, fine with him if terrorists buy guns. Fine with him if drug dealers buy guns. It's fine with him if people who beat their wives or kill other people buy guns. No problem. That's Rand Paul. Of course, he's a libertarian. I guess you'd expect that kind of worldview from him. Marco Rubio, he wants to be president. He says, hey, it's fine with me if, you know, drug dealers buy guns. It's fine with me if murderers buy guns. It's you know, gutless wonder Marco Rubio. Let's see, who else on this list might want to be president? I think Lindsey Graham has already given up his presidential aspirations. But he also says, you know, terrorists, that's cool. He doesn't care. Jeff Flake. David Vitter. Mitch McConnell. He's number five in line, six in line, something like that. I don't know what the line is to the presidency. Let's see, it goes president, vice president, speaker of the House of Representatives. And the speaker, is it then the president pro tem of the Senate? So that's not the Senate majority leader. I don't know who that is. I don't know how that works. I thought that was the vice president. I thought it was all the same thing. And then it goes through a couple of cabinet officers. But in any case, arguably one of the most powerful men in the United States, Mitch McConnell, the head of the Senate Republicans. Mitch McConnell says, hey, you know, terrorists want guns. Just tell them to go to a gun show. Hey, what the hell? What kind of pathetic. Anthony in Eureka, California, listening to KGOE. We have been on KGOE for, it seems like, a decade now. It's great to still be on there. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Brother Tom, thank you for taking my call. You're very astute. The reason we are not prevailing over the Republicans and the NRA is that we are not framing the debate in the proper language in psychiatric and psychological terms. Mike Papantino, George Lakoff, Marshall McLuhan, Mike Malloy, Chomsky, clinical psychologist, you, Justin Frank, all say they are suffering from psychopathy and narcissistic personality disorder. Mike Papantino says it is crazy not to highlight that. We cannot prevail over them unless you get to the root cause.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So in other words, we need to call them psychopaths. I would, you know, respectfully disagree and say that the reason that we're not prevailing over them is because in this constitutional monarchy of ours, the monarchs, the Supreme Court, have said that speech is the same thing as money. Excuse me, money, which is property, is not property, actually, that it's speech, and that therefore it's legal to buy members of Congress. And that all of these gutless wonders that I just named, from Lamar Alexander at the beginning of the A to Senator Wicker at the end of the W's, and all in between, Mr. Inhofe and Mr. Isaacson and Mr. Johans and Mr. Johnson and Mr. Lee and Mr. McConnell, and on the list goes, that they're bought and paid for. They're just shills, bought and paid for. The NRA, which represents a very, very profitable, very powerful industry that makes its money making weapons of mass destruction, or weapons of destruction, weapons of death, owns these guys and girls, these men and women. Tony in Chicago. Hey, Tony, what's up? Tony? No, Tony. Okay. Jerry in Chicago. Ed in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom, there's an angle that I don't think anyone's talked about, and that is that when you make something illegal like guns, assault weapons and things of that nature, what will happen is that there's going to be a demand. We can't change the demand, and we'll have organized crime fill that demand, and we'll have terrorists or criminals getting those guns. Only the difference is they'll have even a greater market from which to draw from.
Okay, so we should simply decriminalize everything.
We should decriminalize drugs and alcohol and just do what we can.
Oh, we've already decriminalized alcohol.
Yeah, I know. And
we regulate
it because of prohibition.
We regulate it. Nobody has argued. Nobody, you know, Ed, this is one of those straw man arguments. Nobody is arguing in favor of criminalizing guns, number one. We're talking about not even regulating guns. This was not even legislation to regulate guns. This was such a wimpy, piece of crap legislation. This was such a compromise. This was such a wimpy piece of legislation. Forgive me if I offended anybody. I shouldn't use language like that on the radio. Whether it's legal or not, I shouldn't do it. But this piece of legislation was simply to say that gun show loopholes and to, you know, to satisfy Pat Toomey. I mean, so, you know, so that a Republican would go along with it. It had to be a gun show that had at least 75 guns for sale. Right. So now you're going to start seeing, you know, gun shows popping up all over the place that are 50 guns. Right. Yeah. I'm 50 dealers. But in any case, all it said was that you have to prove that you're not crazy and you're not violent and you're not a criminal. And before you can buy a gun, nobody's talking about criminalizing guns. We're talking about keeping guns out of the hands of criminals. That's a very different thing than saying you may. I know nobody, and to the best of my knowledge, I mean, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, prove you're not a criminal and you can buy some pot, you know, I'd probably do it. It's been a long time. It's been a long, long time. But, you know, I think it's a better drug than alcohol, frankly. And but I think that by trying to draw a comparison here, Ed, you are doing the NRA's sadly work, and so I would advise you not to bother. Megan in Little Rock, Arkansas. Megan, we have a minute until the end of the hour. What's up?
Hey, Tom. This is Megan, and I am, you know, I'm furious with Mark Pryor, but all we hear in Little Rock is about all these hunters who are afraid they're going to get their guns taken. And I'm not sure what he was supposed to do, although now Asa Hutchinson, our other representative, is trying to arm security guards in our schools.
Yeah.
I'm a little demoralized.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to do as a progressive in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Well, I think that what you should do is get organized with other progressives. Go to pdamerica.org and see if there's a local chapter and see if there's a local group of people who get together. And you know, I mean, there's strength in numbers. There has never been a successful social movement in the United States that didn't start out small and didn't start out local. It always started with just a couple of people. We look back and we say, oh, look at that. Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. Wasn't that incredible? Weren't they extraordinary? No, they began. Right? And actually, they didn't even begin. They were the first high-profile beginners. So I would say, Megan, go to pdamerica.org or movetoamend.org. They both have local chapters all over the country. And see who's there in Little Rock that you can hang out with. There's got to be some good people. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. My favorite quote for the day, John Kenneth Galbraith. The modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Right. So how is that being played out in our world today? Well, let's start with ExxonMobil, one of the most profitable companies in the world that regularly pays no U.S. income tax. They had a pretty horrible tar sands oil spill in Arkansas last month. Most people have heard bits and pieces of the story, but here's what you probably have not heard from the corporate media. First off, you got a glance of the ruptured the pipeline rupture and a spill, and the spill because of citizen bloggers and journalists like Drew Barnes, who posted a video of it on YouTube. But you haven't seen much coverage from the air of this, have you? That's because, just like with the BP Halliburton blowout in the Gulf, the FAA imposed a no-fly zone over the oil spill. You're not allowed to see what's going on. ExxonMobil has even hired local police for security, and they're doing a pretty good job of keeping reporters away, according to Mother Jones, reporting that documented numerous instances of people being threatened with arrest for just trying to ask questions or take pictures on site. Second, with all the money and profits from that oil pipeline, ExxonMobil doesn't have to pay into the federal fund to clean up oil disasters, including this one. Why? Because the stuff in that pipeline isn't oil, in quotes. It's that stuff that the press refers to as tar sands oil from Canada, but legally is known as diluted How do you say this, Shana? Do you know? Or Jim? Is it bitumen? Bitumen? B-I-T-U-M-E-N. It's one of those words I've been reading since I was a little kid. I never heard said out loud. Let's say it's bitumen, whatever it is. It's basically it's slurried coal. It's shale, right? It's related to coal. And according to a 1980 law pushed through and passed by our bought-off Congress, that stuff that comes from Canada, that diluted bitumen, not being oil, is not subject to the tiny taxes that are imposed on regular oil and regular pipelines to pay into a fund to help cover the cost of spills from regular oil from regular pipelines. So even though this is worse, it's free. Another reason by the diluted bitumen, a.k.a. tar sands oil, that'll be coming down the Keystone XL pipeline will be even more profitable for the big oil companies who plan to refine it in the Texas coast and then ship the refined diesel they extract to it from it to England and Mexico and China and Brazil. We, by the way, will get to keep all the poisons left over from the refining process right here in the United States. We get to pay for all the cancers from them. Expect Cancer Alley down south to grow substantially. Finally, to add insult to injury, we get one of the more heavily oil industry-funded members of Congress, Oklahoma Republican Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen, who tells us this.
I think Exxon should be actually patted on the back for the way they handled this.
Right. And this clueless congressional newbie repeats the lie that if the Keystone Pipeline carrying more of this tar sands oil to the Gulf Coast is finished, it'll somehow reduce our dependence on Middle Eastern oil. Trying to tie the wonders of ExxonMobil to the bombing in Boston, this fool actually said, quote, I mean, would we rather buy oil from the Middle East that sponsors the acts that we saw, like at the marathon that we just saw yesterday? End quote. I guess the congressman got out ahead of John King and CNN in knowing who blew up the pressure cookers in Boston. But aside from that stupidity, the pipeline will not reduce our dependence on foreign oil a bit, because all that slurry from Canada is going to very, very profitable refineries on the Gulf Coast where they can export the refined gas and diesel overseas. Last year, our nation's number one export, it was not TVs or jeans or computers. We invented all those things, but we don't make them here anymore. Number one export of the United States of America, gasoline and diesel fuel. Refined oil products. Yep, the big oil companies are exporting gas and diesel from the U.S. like crazy, keeping the prices here high for us and the profits for them very, very high. And they want to export even more and let us keep the wastes and the cancers and the oil spill risks. We've been scammed from the 1980 law exempting the oil companies from paying into cleanup funds for Canadian tar sands oil, to blocking our press from covering their spills, to buying and selling our members of Congress like they were cattle or sheep. All of this. Now, just think about this for a minute. This oil industry is doing all this stuff to keep alive a 19th century fuel. This is the 21st century, for goodness sake. A 19th century fuel that is destroying our planet. It's time to leave behind fossil fuels altogether. Portugal just produced 70% of all their power needs from renewables. We can do that too. We're still the nation that put a man on the moon. We invented the transistor, the integrated circuit. I remember when it happened. We have led the world for centuries. If we could just get the bought and paid for politicians out of the way, and get our press to actually cover the horrors of tar sands oil and the reality of climate change, we just may be able to once again have that John F. Kennedy vision of being the city on the hill. Yeah, I know Reagan used the phrase too, but he was quoting Kennedy. We should even take a lesson from the dozens of nations that have nationalized their oil and like Norway, use that money to send their kids to college. Can you imagine? Hey, we got a lot of oil under the ground in the United States. It belongs to us. We're going to send our kids to school with it. You can pump it out and make a little profit on it, but it's our oil. They do that up in Texas, or up in Alaska, you know. They got this permanent fund. It's got millions and millions of dollars in it every year. When Sarah Palin was governor, every year she sent out a check for $2,000, not just to every voter, but to at three-year-olds, six-week-olds. People would try to have their baby the day before the checks went out so they'd get last year's check plus next year's check. I mean, come on. If the Socialist Republic of Alaska can do it, why can't the rest of the... I mean, you know, if a socialist like Sarah Palin can pull that off and be proud of it, it's time for us to step up and speak out and say, you know, the oil industry does not represent us. It does not own us. And we are not going to let them destroy our planet or our country or our way of life or our lives or perhaps most importantly, and all those things are very important, but the thing that can influence all the rest of them, our form of government. We're not going to let them do that anymore. We are going to show up and we are going to speak out and we are going to hold them accountable. You've been noticing how long it's been taking the Obama administration to come to a decision about the Keystone XL pipeline. The pressure is enormous. You can add to it. Go to 350.org and become part of the solution. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
By the way, they're preparing to have a press conference about the Boston bombing. We'll give you that information right after the break. Stick around. Tom Hartman here with you, and it looks like the press conference in Boston is beginning. So let's just go right to it and see what they have to say.
Hey, I am the special agent in charge of the FBI's Boston division. Since Monday's bombings, the FBI and our law enforcement partners have been working around the clock and are fully committed to investigating this matter to bring those responsible to justice. Our collective law enforcement team has pursued thousands of leads and tips.
Did you guys?
As I said 2 days ago, we are working methodically and with a sense of urgency to identify those responsible for the bombings. Within the last day or so, through that careful process, we initially developed a single person of interest. Not knowing that the individual was acting alone or in concert with others, we obviously worked with extreme purpose to make that determination. The entire force of the federal government, the FBI in Boston, around the world, as well as our partners in the Boston Police, ATF, Massachusetts State Police, and more than 30 agencies of the Boston Joint Terrorism Task Force have set about to ensure that all responsible for the bombings will be brought to justice. More importantly, it was done to ensure the future safety of the city of Boston, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and the country. Indeed, through that process, the FBI developed a second suspect. Today, we are enlisting the public's help to identify the two suspects. After a very detailed analysis of photo, video, and other evidence, we are releasing photos of these two suspects. They are identified as Suspect 1 and Suspect 2. They appear to be associated. Suspect 1 is wearing a dark hat. Suspect 2 is wearing a white hat. Suspect 2 set down a backpack at the site of the second explosion just in front of the Forum restaurant. We strongly encourage those who were at the Forum restaurant who have not contacted us yet to do so. As you can see from one of the images, Suspects 1 and 2 appear to be walking together through the marathon crowd on Boylston Street in the direction of the finish line. That image was captured as they walked on Boylston in the vicinity of the intersection with Gloucester Street. As you can see, the quality of the photos is quite good, but we will continue to work on developing additional images to improve their identification value. further, on FBI.gov, we have photos of the suspects. The photos and videos are posted for the public and media to use, review, and publicize. For clarity, these images should be the only ones, and I emphasize the only ones, that the public should view to assist us. Other photos should not be deemed credible, and they unnecessarily divert the public's attention in the wrong direction and create undue work for vital law enforcement resources. For more than 100 years, the FBI has relied upon the public to be its eyes and ears. With the media's help, in an instant, these images will be delivered directly into the hands of millions around the world. We know the public will play a critical role in identifying and locating these individuals. Somebody out there knows these individuals as friends, neighbors, co-workers, or family members of the suspects. Though it may be difficult, the nation is counting on those with information to come forward and provide it to us. No bit of information, no matter how small or seemingly inconsequential, is too small for us to see. Each piece moves us forward towards justice. It is extremely important to contact us with any information regarding the identities of Suspect 1, Suspect 2, and their location. We consider them to be armed and extremely dangerous. No one should approach them. No one should attempt to apprehend them except law enforcement. Let me reiterate that caution. Do not take any action on your own. If you see these men, contact law enforcement. If you know anything about the bombings or the men pictured here, please call the telephone listed on the photo arrays. That's 1-800-CALL-FBI. Again, that's 1-800-225-5324. All calls will be kept confidential. We have also established a website for tips that directly relates to the bombing. Please contact us at bostonmarathontips.fbi.gov. Again, that website is bostonmarathontips.fbi.gov. The photos can be viewed on our website, fbi.gov. It is important to emphasize the images from Monday are indelible, and the horror of that day will remain with us forever. This further underscores our obligation to investigate this crime judiciously in order to bring those responsible to justice. The victims and the survivors deserve nothing more. Nothing less, excuse me. As to Monday's victims, the FBI is committed to ensuring that victims receive the rights they are entitled to and the assistance they need to cope with the crime. Treating victims with respect and providing them with assistance, benefits, and help and assistance will better our cases. Our resources include an Office of Victim Assistance at FBI headquarters and victim specialists nationwide. These highly trained professionals can assist victims and coordinate with other agencies to provide victims with the support, information, and resources necessary to effectively meet their needs. Our victim specialist team continues to work around the clock to bring assistance to the victims of this heinous act. Identifying and locating those responsible is now our highest priority. No other details of the investigation will be released at this time because this is our focus now. It continues to be an ongoing, active investigation. Review these photographs and contact us at 1-800-CALL-FBI or www.bostonmarathontips.fbi.gov immediately. Thank you very much.
There you go. That's a spokesperson for the FBI. I'm sorry, he introduced himself at the very beginning. I didn't make a note of it. So, but bostonmarathontips.fbi. I'm not going to say anything until I'm absolutely sure of it. 800-CALL-FBI. I know that number for sure. And he said, you know, go to the FBI website, fbi.gov. And there are the photos. He said, please don't look at anybody else's. There's all these photos running around the Internet. I don't think he was just picking on John King there. I mean, you know, it's. He said, these are the only pictures. We're pretty sure these are the guys. I'm paraphrasing here, of course. And if you know them, call us. Looks to me like the net is getting tighter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So now we'll see some progress. We'll be right back. 28 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program. bad and the very, very concatenatively ugly. The good. Nuns on the Bus. The road-tripping group of activist nuns took the fight for health care access to Rick Perry's doorstep on Wednesday, joining in with thousands of other Texans at that state's capital to protest Governor Perry's refusal to accept Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. Spreading their own unique message of social justice and economic equality, the nuns have been traveling across the country for the past year, protesting Republican austerity policies that they see as contrary to the teachings of the Catholic Church. As Sister Simone Campbell, one of the nuns who participated in the protest, remarked, quote, Jesus said to care for the sick, to care for those who are left and the folks at the margins, who are the low-wage workers, end quote. Good work, ladies. Let's just hope Rick Perry, Governor Goodhair, can see the Bible the same way you do. The bad. Pat Robertson. What a surprise, huh? On Tuesday, the 700 Club host offered a truly bizarre explanation for the marriage equality movement. Check this out.
If you go back in history to the French Revolution, you find there was a thrust spurred by the writings of a group called the Illuminati to destroy the family. We have here a debate over same-sex marriage, but is it really just about marriage? Or does it go far beyond that to destroying the traditional family and building a country without God?
Right. The Illuminati is using same-sex marriage to destroy humanity. And by the way, replace humanity with what? Lizard people? Anyhow, compelling theory you got there, Pat. And the very, very ugly, Dennis Johnson. The co-majority leader of the House of Representatives found himself in hot water yesterday when he used an anti-Semitic slur while giving a speech in support of a law that would allow Oklahoma retailers to sell products at a loss. Check this one out.
That's what you advertise. That's what you do as a small business, and then you get the reward of success. People come back to you. They like what you do. They like the service they get, and they don't ask me. They might try to Jew me down on a price. That's fine. You know what? That's free market as well.
Right. Johnson realized his mistake and then tried to make amends for his inappropriate comments. But as you can see in this next clip, his apology won't help him avoid any accusations of anti-Semitism.
I apologize to the Jews. They're good small businessmen as well.
Unbelievable. And very, very ugly. Mike in Fairfax, Virginia.
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
I'm fine. How are you, Mike?
I'm living the dream. Hey, I got a question. If we had closed the gun show loophole and expanded background checks, how exactly did that save Gabby Giffords, prevent Aurora or Newtown? Those were all legally purchased and registered weapons.
It may not have, but, you know, we've got 10, 20, 30,000 people a year in this country who die as a result of guns. You got 2, 3, 4, 5 times that number of people who are shot and wounded with these guns. You got probably 30 times that number of people who are intimidated, threatened, robbed at gunpoint with these kind of guns. Is reasonable, Mike, for us to say, as decent law-abiding people, that rights come with responsibilities, and if you want the right to carry your gun, to own your gun, you have to demonstrate that you are a responsible person, that you do not, in your spare time, beat the bejesus out of your wife, that you have never shot somebody, that you don't have a criminal background? What's wrong with that, Mike?
Well, I'm for being responsible. My point was that
it does not sound like you are for being responsible. It sounds like you're for being irresponsible. It sounds like want the wife beaters to be able to have all the guns they want. I got a problem with that.
You said that. All I'm saying is I'm tired of the demagoguery surrounding every time.
What kind of demagoguery is there around saying if you beat your wife, you can't buy a gun?
Victims on Air Force One and flying them down and saying.
What kind of demagoguery is there around saying if you beat your wife, you can't buy a gun?
Okay, that's not what this issue is about.
That is absolutely what this issue is about. That is what this vote was about, Mike.
The background checks don't stop Newtown, and using those people as props is pathetic.
So please tell me, Mike, what is so noble about saying, if you beat your wife,
You know, I am Mitch McConnell, and I certify you to buy whatever gun you want because I think it's just a great thing. In fact, I am Mike, and I think that if you beat your wife, you should be able to buy a gun. Because you realize, you know, and the reason I use that example is because one of the major ways that men kill their wives in this country is with guns.
Now, the only thing I think that gets prevented by expanded background checks is it prevents Eric Holder from letting straw purchasers walk guns to Mexico.
Mike.
That's the only thing it would prevent, because if
you know, actually, the straw purchasers is a big problem, and that program that was started under the George Bush administration. I know you want to politicize it, tragically, it was Republicans in the state of Arizona who got a law passed that made it illegal to stop those straw purchases, and that's the reason why Eric Holder had to watch them walk to Mexico and couldn't arrest them when the sale happened in the parking lot was because of Jan Brewer and the Republicans in the state of Arizona passing the law that's saying, sorry, feds, you can't do this. Nice try, Mike. Jerry in Amityville, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, before I get started, that's just amazing. Using the universal background check issue to attack Eric Holder, and that's really a new
one. You know, these guys are shills. It's, come on.
Yeah. Well, on the federal gun legislation that failed to pass in the U.S. Senate yesterday, especially the background check issue, it shows me a number of things. First of all, it shows me how politically bought up and sold out our Congress is, that we cannot even get passed in the U.S. Senate highly watered down background check legislation with loopholes in it that, in my opinion, are big enough to drive a Mack truck through. That's first of all. And secondly, also what happened yesterday.
Well, that was just to get Pat Toomey on board.
Yeah.
I mean, fewer than 75 gun dealers and it's not a gun show. What?
Right, and then private sales would pretty much be exempt. And in Webster, New York, that sociopath who shot the two firemen, it's my understanding he got his gun through a private sale through a neighbor who probably didn't know he had a criminal background,
right,
where he had been.
Well, there's a certain point where you can't regulate and control everything, but you do what you can do, and that's what makes me crazy, Jerry. When I get this last caller, it's like, oh well, you know, we can't do everything, so let's do nothing. What kind of stupidity is that? You can't stop every bank robber from robbing every bank. Let's not do away with bank robbery, anti-bank robbery laws. You're not going to stop every shoplifter. That doesn't mean that you don't make it legal or that you do make. You understand what I'm saying. The logic, well, there is no logic. These are not logical arguments. What these are bumper stickers and talking points for people with IQs below room temperature that these people, you know, can motivate to get out to the ballot. Out to the ballot box and vote. And it's one of the tragedies of American democracy that our constitutional monarchy here, our Supreme Court, the monarchs of our constitutional monarchy have said, oh, money? No, that's property. That's not property. That's speech. Corporations, they're not artificial creations of the law. They're persons, don't you know? And the NRA and the gun manufacturers, they're persons, and their money is speech. And these persons can use that speech to buy Mr. Alexander and Ms. Ayotte and Mr. Barrasso and Mr. Baucus and Mr. Begich and Mr. Blunt and Mr. Boozman and Mr. Burr and Mr. Chambliss, Mr. Coates and Mr. Coburn and Mr. Cochran and Mr. Corker and Mr. Cornyn and Mr. Crapo, Mr. Cruz, Mr. Enzi, Mr. Fisher, Mr. Flake, Mr. Graham, Mr. Grassley, Mr. Hatch, Ms. Heidkamp, Mr. Heller, Mr. Hoven, Mr. Inhofe, Mr. Isaacson, Mr. Johans, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Lee, Mr. McConnell, Mr. Moran, Ms. Murkowski, Mr. Rand Paul, Mr. Portman, Mr. Pryor, Harry Reid, that was a procedural vote that he voted, Mr. Risch, Mr. Roberts, Mr. Rubio, Mr. Scott, Mr. Sessions, Mr. Shelby, Mr. Thune, Mr. Vitter, and Mr. Wicker. It's crazy. Carl in Boulder, Colorado, listening to AM 760. Get a minute to the break. Carl, what's up?
Tom, I'd like to try to explain to you why some people feel the way they do about universal background checks.
I'd like to ask you a question. I'd like you to think about it. Would you support a universal background check for use of your First Amendment rights?
It is, that is a total nonsense question, Carl.
I don't believe so.
I do not use my First Amendment rights to kill people.
A lot of
words
people
coming
do,
out of
people have been bullied, you know.
We actually do have a universal background check for people who can use their words to kill people. Members of Congress arguably can use their words for killing people because they can declare war. And we collectively, as a people, background check all of them through a process called primaries and elections. So I guess, Carl, the answer to your question is yes. 45 minutes past the end. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Do you support universal background checks for speaking? No, sure. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. You disagree with background checks? Really, Armin?
According to you and your logic, if only our founders would have had registered weapons with Britain and background checks to be scrutinized by Britain, think of how different this country could have been. We would have never had a country that is the White House of the world.
Armin, if you were only, 35,000 feet tall, you could grab an airplane as it flies by. I mean, you know, what does one have to do with the other? When the Second Amendment was passed, it was passed for two main reasons. I'll give you a whole bunch of time here, Armin. Just hang on. The Second Amendment was passed for two principal reasons. In the northern states, it was passed because they were concerned about standing armies during times of peace being a pernicious thing. And you know that. And in the southern states, it was passed so that Georgia, Virginia, North, and South Carolina could continue to have their state militias, which also were known as slave patrols, to keep the slaves in line. That's why the Second Amendment was passed. That's why it says free state rather than free nation. That's why it's phrased the way it is. That's the whole beginning and end of it. Now, as to whether or not the founders should have had their weapons registered with the government of England, in all probability, they did.
Background checks.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, imagine if they would have had to have them registered with Britain.
They did.
And background checks.
They probably did.
And background checks before they got them.
Armin,
no,
the only...
Didn't.
Armin, it was illegal in 1776. Armin, let me finish
says,
a sentence here. I think you do not know this, Armin, and you need to know this. Go back and look at the history of the British East India Company and the economy in the United States. In 1776, there was this whole long list of things that it was illegal to manufacture in the United States. You could not manufacture fine men's or women's clothing. You could not manufacture, there was a whole bunch of weapons that you could not manufacture in the United States. You had to buy them from England. England wanted to keep their factories humming and keep their people employed. We were an import place. We were exporting raw materials. We were exporting cotton and things like that. But we had to import our weapons. So odds are most of the people who owned a weapon back in 1776, which was a very small minority of people, only 13% of people in 1800, at the time Thomas Jefferson was elected, only 13% of the adult males in the United States owned a weapon because they were so damn expensive. So odds are England did know.
The reason why, thank God for what the Republicans did yesterday, and thank God for making sure those minority of people that had weapons when this country was founded didn't have to have them registered or background checked with that filthy bunch of scumbags over in England that want to oppress everybody, including the slaves and the people that own them. Thank God that this went down yesterday the way it went down.
So, Armin, what makes you think that England didn't know that the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, and by doing so, instantly became traitors to England and instantly became condemned to death, to hang by their necks until dead,
that those 56 men didn't also have a gun. I don't get it. Why do you think that whether or not they had a gun was more important than whether or not they were willing to commit treason?
They had the freedom to have that gun without being registered so that there was a list to go pick them up by England.
I don't.
And they had the ability, the people that could afford them and get them somehow had the ability unhindered to get them and possess them. And thank God that we had our founders and they weren't registered.
You don't know that, Armin.
And
you don't know that.
They did, Tom.
You don't know that. Now, I'll tell you, I don't know that either. But what I do know is that guns were really, really expensive and that the East India Company pretty much controlled the trade in them and that records were kept of sales. But again, setting that aside, Armin, what makes, you know, they did know who those 56 guys were who signed the Declaration of Independence. And
how many of them were wife beaters?
Actually, probably one or two were. I mean, they weren't always the world's best people. Armin, thanks for the call. Ed in Pleasant Plains, Illinois. I'm surprised, Armin. Ed in Pleasant Plains, Illinois. Right, what's up, Ed?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks.
That was really entertaining.
What can you do?
My point is...
Armin's a good guy, actually.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Yeah, the point I want to make is there are people who make guns and munitions.
Yes.
Okay. They have worldwide networks of these products.
Yes.
They are selling them either directly or indirectly through people who do this job for them to people who live in ghettos, to people who live in other very, very sensitive places where people have no defenses.
Right.
I would like to see... some program, some organization, take a look at that trail of crime from the beginning, where it begins with the gun manufacturers, and it ends up killing people in the ghettos, or in Arabic countries, or Hispanic countries, Venezuela, who knows where these things end up.
Right.
And we are missing something here.
The international arms trade is pretty grim stuff, and there's the UN's trying to put together a treaty on this stuff, and the Republicans are all hysterical about it, and they don't want to participate in that. Ed, thanks for calling and raising that. Apropos of what Armin had to say, I'm guessing that Armin's probably gotten one of these viral emails that's going around that says that, you know, if the founding fathers had to register their guns, the British would have been able to come by and pick up their guns. And the fact of the matter is, the British knew who the founding fathers were. They signed the Declaration of Independence. The British knew who these guys were. They didn't come by to get their guns because the British didn't have that many people here. I mean, you know, we started, you know, it started out in 1773. It was about a three-year process. In December 1773, you had the Boston Tea Party. Then you had the Boston Ports Act. And then you had a year later, you had the shot fired, heard around the world. But, you know, they didn't have the military to do it. So it's a straw man argument. It's the kind of argument that the NRA wants to put out to get good, decent people to go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I don't want the government to know about my gun because someday I want to shoot at the government. And just think about the logic of that for a second, how insane that is. Someday you might want to shoot at the government. Tomorrow, brunch with Bernie, and don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.